Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, June 6th, 2005. Today's session is entitled Moses and Joshua Remove Their Shoes, Part 1 of the History of Biblical Shoe Removal, presented by Dan Erlander, session number ERD 2005-01.
I'm Dan Erlander, and I'll be teaching this Bible study this week. And I'm really off to a good start here, you can tell. This is what I'm going to say, this is a summer program, and this is the first class of the entire summer, and this is awesome that we're all here for this, and so I'll try to be good.
You better, Dan, we'll get you.
And the theme, as we know, is the word to Moses, take off your shoes, for you are on holy ground. And just so you get a concept, this is two Bible time sandal styles. The one above and the one below. And the one below, as you notice, provides for more heel movement. And, well, you can study those as they move along. I'm going to break in this class, and part of it will be about a 6-minute segment from the book Moses, A Life by Jonathan Kirsch. And I've only listened to it on the tape, books on tape, which this will be part of. But everything you ever wanted to know about Moses, every rabbi has said about Moses through history, plus the story, plus all the scholarly work, like we have a scholarship on the Jesus of history. Well, this is a scholarship on the Moses of history. So it's Moses Alive, and the reader that you'll hear reading a little segment of this book is Michael Gross, you know, who is on Family Ties, and I feel very endeared to him because 3 times in my life I've had somebody come up and think I'm Michael Gross. and one time it was at a Sylmar in California, the conference center, and I was in the line, and this man came up and says, "Well, Michael Gross, so happy to meet you." And I said, "Well, sometimes people think I look like Michael Gross, but I'm not." And he says, "Well, I understand completely how you celebrities are, but anyway, I'm so pleased to meet you." So, but you'll only hear his voice, which you'll find is a little deeper than mine. So that will be, that's out of this book. Starting with this, just to set our minds on this, is that I think all of us could share times when we have been in holy places, or places that we would call holy or spiritually awesome. And I hope some of our time this week will be sharing some of these stories. But I'll start by sharing one. Part of the reason I want to share is that I have, in my whole life, I have 2 great lines that I, you know, did you ever say something that should go down in history? So I'll tell the story. We were in Jerusalem on one of these tours, and with the tour group flowing through the sites in Jerusalem. And we were in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the church, you know, the center church where the tomb where Jesus was laid. And I kind of wandered off from the tour group and went down these stairs, and I was down below, standing in this empty space, and just standing there thinking where I was, and then a group of Franciscan monks holding candles came in chanting, and I was in the middle, and then the whole group chanted around. They didn't pay any attention to me, but they just chanted around me. And I just thought I had died and gone to heaven with this. And then I heard this voice saying, and it was Karen, "The tour group is leaving. Where have you been? I've been looking all over for you." So then I said, "Did you not know that I must be at my father's But that kind of begins, you know, it truly, we do truly, like that time, have these moments where all of a sudden God is so real. And then that space where we were when that happened becomes, in a way, holy space. Were you stretching, or do you?
No, I'm pretending to be my wife.
Now, what I'd like to begin with is, if you have Bibles, we'll focus on Exodus 3, 1 through 6. But I'm going to, that's the story of the burning bush. And I'm going to move up towards that story by just telling what happens before there. So just let this be a story time. A new king had been crowned in Egypt. I'm going to start over on the present tense. That's more fun. A new king is crowned in Egypt. And this king does not know Joseph. Or the meaning of that word "know" really means does not really care about Joseph, who brought his family to Egypt. And the new king said, "Arg," or "Ufta" in an Egyptian translation, because the Hebrew people are multiplying, and they are going to be more powerful and more numerous than we are. And if an invader comes, there's a danger that they will side with the invader. The answer the Pharaoh comes up with is to turn them into slaves. And then there is ruthless oppression and near slave labor. The story goes on to one of the greatest stories in history of women acting together in clever resistance and civil disobedience. Have you ever heard of that? Happened again, and this one is great. Pharaoh orders that all the Hebrew midwives will kill Hebrew boys just as they are born. Let the girls live, but kill all the boys. And his first problem with this is that the Hebrew midwives don't do it. And then comes with his wrath, and then he actually believes them, because men often don't know about things like how birth happens, at least in those days. So the women just say, "Well, you know, you have to understand Hebrew. Hebrew babies are different than Egyptian babies. They're so strong when they come out that the midwife hasn't even arrived yet, and then they get away." And the Pharaoh evidently believes that. So then they begin to multiply even more. And then the Pharaoh comes up with this idea: all newborn Hebrew babies, throw them into the Nile River. And there was one Hebrew baby boy born to a man and his wife. and they are Levites. And he is a fine baby boy. And the word fine there is the Hebrew tov, which is the same as in Genesis. God looked at everything God had made, and behold, it was very tov, very good. So the little tov boy is born. And the story is the mother places tov boy into a basket, covers it, and in an area of reeds pushes the little basket out. And then the princess of Egypt, the daughter of the Pharaoh, is walking along and sees the basket and opens it up and sees this cute, cute little Hebrew infant. Did you ever see an infant that wasn't cute and darling? And this one really is, and decides to adopt this little child, to grow up in the palace as her son. The name is given Moses, which means drawn out of the water. Now, here is really a clever thing. The older sister of the little baby, most likely Miriam, goes to the princess and says, do you need a Hebrew to help? And she hires the mother of the baby to take care of the baby and be the, can't think of the word.
Wet nurse.
Wet nurse. Thank you. I'm kind of an Egyptian man. Wet nurse. And isn't this a trick? Not only do you get to raise your own son, but you get paid for it by the government. Now, Moses grows up and evidently has an identity that he is a Hebrew. And he sees the slaves, and he sees especially one Egyptian taskmaster beating a Hebrew. And Moses looks around and sees that no one is watching. So he kills the Egyptian. Then the next day, two Hebrews are fighting, and Moses goes to break it up. And then one of them says, well, are you going to kill us like you killed that person yesterday? And then Moses said, people know. So Moses flees to the land of Midian, and there he sits at a well. And this is one of the great well love stories in the Bible. So much romance happens at the well. And it's why the woman at the well in John, you know, is so fascinating, you know. Is this another romance? So he sits at the well, and then lo and behold, now would this be a surprise? Reuel is a sheep herder, and he has seven daughters, and Moses is just sitting there by the well, and all seven of them come around the hill down to the well and says, am I dreaming? But then some bad shepherds come and start to harass the seven daughters and try to drive them away. And Moses intervenes and saves the daughters, and they go back home with their, after watering their sheep. And then Reuel, the father, says, well, bring him here that we may break bread. And we know the depth of the meaning of breaking bread together in those ancient societies. So not only does Reuel give to Moses bread, but also gives to Moses Zipporah, his daughter, in marriage. And they give birth to a son. And then Moses seemingly has no inner drive to be one of the most famous people in the history of the entire earth, and just settles down to being a shepherd and lives his daily life keeping the sheep of Reuel, and gets up another day and he takes the sheep then we have God looking at this whole scene, and God looks at Egypt, and I could just break in here in the story. The verbs are marvelous, the lists of verbs that God is doing. God sees the Israelite slaves in Egypt and their oppression. God hears their groaning in pain. God remembers the promises made to Abraham and Sarah and to their ancestors. And God knows, meaning deeply feels with them. And God sees Moses leading his flock to Horeb, called the Mountain of God. Not because he's so anxious to worship, but it's a good place to take the sheep. And don't theophanies often happen in daily life?